Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on privacy when we come back. Now, here's an interesting statement. It says, "Then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, 'We ought to obey God rather than men.'" You'll see that in Acts 5, verse 29. You know, that's a revolutionary concept. But it's impossible to put into practice unless you know the law. Can you imagine yourself actually telling a policeman or a judge that the law of God supersedes the law of the state? Well, there are actually three sources of information, or three sources of authority, that support Peter's position in that statement in Acts 5, verse 29. The First Amendment of our Constitution is one. And Public Law 97-280, enacted by Congress back in 1983, is two. And a case called Seeger versus United States, decided by our Supreme Court back in 1963, is the third. Now, do you know the scriptural law to cite in support of your position on, say, the census, or the public school issue, or Social Security, vaccinations, or the many other laws of the scripture that conflict with the laws of the state? And do you know how to look them up, research them out, or code plead the law to use the scripture to defend yourself against state and federal incursion into your constitutionally protected rights? Because if you don't know the law of the scripture, and you don't know the law of the state, then you're in no position to challenge either one, are you? So if you're tired of being a biblical illiterate with the police and public officials kicking sand in your face, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? It's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now for yourself. It's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about privacy and privacy issues this week. Oftentimes people will come into my office and they'll say, "Well, you can't do this or you can't do that without a Social Security number." Now, 14 million people in this country do not have Social Security numbers. That's 14 million adults. I'm not talking about children now, babies. I'm talking about adults, 14 million. Now, there's 300 million people in the country, and 14 million of us don't have Social Security numbers. I'm one of those. It's not often that you're going to run into somebody without a Social Security number, but I just wanted to let you know that there are a couple of three of us out there. We live in this society without Social Security numbers, and now I would submit to you that if I can live here in this society without a Social Security number, it opens the door for the possibility that maybe you too could do the same thing. Now, people who take unpopular positions, such as vaccinations. For instance, I don't have any vaccinations. I don't have a vaccination record. I have at least two of my children with no vaccinations, and they're both adults. If I can live here without vaccinations, and they can live here without vaccinations, I would submit to you that you might consider that as a possibility, that maybe you too could do that. Because approximately 12% of the American public, 12%, that would be about 36 million people, are not vaccinated. Did you know that? Here's another little thought for you. Did you know that 90% Now think about this. 90% of pediatricians are baby doctors. 90% of the pediatricians here in the United States of America do not vaccinate their children. They vaccinate your kid, but they don't vaccinate their own. That was revealed by Dr. Robert Mendelson in his book, How to Read or How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Pediatrician. Is there something that the pediatricians of America know that the average Joe Sixpack or Sally Housewife does not know about vaccinations? These are what we call unpopular positions, contrarian positions. Now, it may well be that you fully believe in vaccinations, and I'm not here to dissuade you from your beliefs. That's not my mission in life. I'm a reporter. I report facts. Now, I just reported a couple of facts to you. Did you know that you could open a bank account in a bank without a Social Security number? I know, you're probably sitting there saying, well, I tried that and they wouldn't open it for me. You know, just because somebody says to you, you have to have these vaccinations, doesn't make it true. And just because somebody says you can't open a bank account without a Social Security number doesn't make it true. There are lots of bank accounts out there without Social Security numbers. Not many. I'm not claiming that the majority now. I'm just saying that there are some. So if some guys could do that, well, then maybe others could do it. Maybe you could do it if you were so inclined. Now, the reason I bring this up is because privacy is something that is entirely personal. Privacy isn't something that the government guarantees you or that the government encourages you to participate in. In fact, quite the opposite. Banks don't encourage you to open a bank account without a Social Security number, even though they know it can be done, I know it can be done, and you probably don't, because they want everybody to have a Social Security number when they open a bank account. Now remember, you've got three identifiers. Your Social Security number, your birth date, and your name are your three identifiers. With those three pieces of information, I can clean out your bank account. I can steal your identity, and I can clean out your credit card accounts. So I don't see the logic in handing out my Social Security number to a stranger. Hell, I wouldn't hand that out to a relative for crying out loud if I knew that he could clean out my bank account. Now there's a problem here in the United States for those of you that live around the world or live overseas that is called identity theft. And identity theft is caused by somebody assuming your identity. For instance, if I have your credit card number and expiration date, I can clean out your credit card. I just need two things on your credit card. I need the number and the expiration date. Every time you use your credit card, every time you walk in to a store and you buy something on a credit card, that clerk who just handled that transaction has the two indici that he needs to steal from your credit card. The expiration date and the number. He doesn't have to have the physical card. He just has to have the expiration date and the number. I would contend that that's more power than I want to give to a clerk behind the counter that I've never met in my life. You know, I got a $10,000 credit limit on my card, and I'm just going to walk in and tell, here's my credit card number, and here's my expiration date. Thanks so much, and walk out the door. And that doesn't make good business sense. People whose identity is being stolen, these people are the proximate cause of their own injury through their ignorance. These are ignorant people that don't know how to protect their privacy. I do. Nobody has stolen my identity in the past. Nobody is about to do it today, and nobody's going to do it in the future, because I'm not going to allow it. I am not going to put myself in a position where you can steal my identity. And that's privacy. I'm going to keep my Social Security number real private. I'm going to keep my birthday real private. Now, my name's pretty public, but then my name is not what you need to steal from me. You've got to have those three. Back in the 1930s, many preachers were opposed to the Social Security number because they thought it was the mark of the beast. I think they were right. I think Social Security is the mark of the beast. You can't buy, sell, or trade without it. Well, at least nominally, they tell you you can't. I buy, sell, and trade every day, and I don't have one. So there's obviously a way around it. And if you put your mind to it, you could discover that way just like anybody else. There's 14 million of us now that know how to live our lives without Social Security numbers. And I haven't noticed any particular deterioration in my ability to buy, sell, trade, or live my life, at least not yet. You know, it may come to that, I don't know, but I think I'm going to avoid the mark of the beast. Now, I'm not going to belabor the issue with bank accounts without a Social Security number, but let me read you a paragraph or two here from the document. I recently received an email from a Texas author who requested information relating to opening a bank account without a Social Security number, so here's the text of the request. He said, I have an associate who's looking for information about the opening of a bank account without a Social Security number. If anyone can put their hands on that information or point me in the right direction, please respond. So I responded and suggested that this was a form of discrimination by the bank, and I suspected that if the individual in question were to begin litigation, the bank would fold and open the desired accounts. But a much better response was returned, and in turn, the Texas author forwarded it to everyone on his list. I was one such recipient. So for those of you seeking such information, this has the potential to be very helpful. So here's the return. Daniel, the subject, bank account with no Social Security number. Hi, I just wanted to drop you a line, let you know about a recent small victory in the no Social Security number corner. I recently tried to open a bank account with my local bank, and when they asked for a Social Security number, I informed them that I didn't have one. They flatly refused to open the account and said that without a Social Security number, that they absolutely could not open an account of any kind. So I then proceeded thus to convince them that they were wrong. First, I informed them that I had terminated my Social Security number legally in accordance with 20 CFR 3A7 404.1905. And, two, I informed them that the bank could not be held legally responsible by anyone for failing to obtain a Social Security number from me pursuant to 31 CFR 103.34A1. And, three, I informed them that under the Internal Revenue Code, Section 6041, that they were not even required to provide any taxpayer identification numbers on the Form 1099 that they file with the IRS at the end of every year. And, four, I informed them that pursuant to 26 CFR 301.6109-1C, that they were under no legal obligation to obtain a Social Security number from me. And, five, I informed them that 42 U.S.C. 408 makes it a felony to use threat, duress, or coercion to try to force a person by fear or deceit to provide his Social Security number in any unlawful manner. After a brief meeting with the bank's controller and legal counsel, I received a phone call stating that I would be allowed to open a checking account. So please pass this information along to your readers in hopes that they may, or it may help someone else who may find themselves in that situation. And also in the response are the sections of law to which the above references. That's the Code of Federal Regulations, Title 20, Volume 2, revised as of April 1, 2003, and from the U.S. Government Printing Office by way of the GPO Access site, 20 CFR 404.1902, on pages 557 and 558. All right, let's stop right there. Can you see that there are ways, with a little knowledge between your ears, that you can accomplish some things that other people would consider to be impossible? Now let's think about this for a second. If 14 million people live in the country and they don't have a Social Security number, it's pretty obvious then that 14 million people can do things that the rest of the society don't believe they can do without one. So as it occurred to you, think about this like the Denny's waitress test. Since 14 million people don't have Social Security numbers, does that mean that those 14 million people don't have bank accounts or don't have driver's licenses? I don't think so. Now, there are a group of people in this country that are called conscientious objectors. they don't serve in the military and they're not drafted into the army. Could it be that there is a way to stay out of the army, out of the draft, and out of the selective service system that maybe you don't know about? I was listening to a guy one time, and he was talking to a group of people, and a fellow raised his voice and said that he didn't believe what this guy was telling him. So the speaker said, "Sir, do you know everything that there is to know in the world?" And the guy said, "Well, no, I don't." And the speaker said, "Sir, do you know one half of everything that there is to know in the world?" And the guy said, "No, I don't know one half of everything in the world that there is to know." Then the speaker said, "Could it be that I am informing you of some things that fall into that one half of everything that there is to know that you don't know? Could it be, boys and girls, that I am informing you today of some things that fall into that one half of everything in the world that there is to know that you haven't heard of yet?" Now, I'm not here to get you to open a bank account without a Social Security number, because I really don't care. I couldn't imagine why anybody would want to open a bank account. Now, there are people out there that need to open bank accounts. I used to have a bank account. I used to think that it was necessary and imperative. But there's no privacy with a bank account. And I want some privacy. I want financial privacy. I don't want anybody to know how much money I've got in the bank, or what I do with it, or who I pay my bills to. Let me tell you a little story here. I was watching a TV show one time, many, many years ago, long, long ago and far, far away. And they had a guy on the show who was called a skip tracer. Now, a skip tracer is like a private detective. He's a guy who's trying to find you, and you're trying to hide from him. You're trying to hide information from this skip tracer, and this skip tracer's job in life. This is what he does to make his living. This is what he pays his mortgage payments with and pays the orthodontist to straighten his kids' teeth out with. He goes out and pries into your personal private affairs to find information about you and deliver it to his boss, who is getting paid by somebody to find out this information about you. Now, earlier I said all of the information that these people get, that's the skip tracer, that's the bank, that's the government agent, the insurance company, all of the information that these people get, they get it from you, and they get it right out of your mouth, and they get it right off of your pen after you wrote it down for them. These people aren't running around behind you now with a clipboard following you and writing down all this information. They just ask you for it, and you give it to them. I showed you that yesterday. You know, I think it was LG Electronics, and they asked 23 questions. There are people out there in society, boys and girls, that answer those questions for those people. Not everybody, but most. That's more than half. Maybe you don't, but most people do. And if you're one of those people who give out this information, well, then you're impairing your privacy. And the bright spot is you can stop impairing your privacy anytime you want. You know, I used to do that. I used to be a normal, everyday Joe Sixpack, and when somebody asked me, you know, I was taught to be a communist. I went to public school. Hell, I was normal at one time. I was institutionalized for 12 years. I know what institutionalization is all about. I know what brainwashing is. I went through the process, and I've recovered from it. Well, partially. You know, maybe I'm not totally recovered yet, but, you know, it's a process. And so I was watching the skip tracer now, and the skip tracer was handed a pile of checks, just canceled checks. And the moderator asked the skip tracer to go off stage and review the checks during the course of the program for about 15 minutes, but it's a 30-minute program, and then come back on and tell the audience everything that he learned from that pile of checks. Now, I don't know how many checks were there, but just looking at the TV screen, I'd say 25, 30, 40 checks, maybe a little stack, you know, maybe 50 checks. And so he leaves the screen, and so the program goes on, and some talk goes on. Pretty soon they bring the guy back, and they set him down and said, "Now, what did you learn from that pile of checks about the person that wrote the checks?" And he said, "Okay." He started off, he had a few notes, and he said, "This man is a middle management government employee, probably a GS 12, 13, or 14. He lives in Arlington, Virginia. And he has an ex-wife, he's divorced, and he has two daughters, two girls. Both of them are girls. He drives this kind of a car." He identified his car. "And he lives at," and he gave us his address. And he said his alimony payment is, and he gave the alimony payment. He says his child support payment is, and he gave the child support payment. And he said he wears this kind of a suit and shoes, and so he identified his suit and shoes, and he went on down the list. And I mean to tell you, boys and girls, he could tell more off of that guy's canceled checks than that guy could have told about himself. Because the guy that wrote all those checks could not possibly have remembered every one of those transactions and what it was that he revealed by his own hand. Now, remember, the guy that's writing the checks, over in the corner, there's a thing called memo, where you jot down, you know, well, here's what I spent this on. Well, now remember, think about the guy's suits. How does the skip tracer know that this guy wears Hickey Freeman suits and winning tip shoes? Well, because when he wrote the check to pay for the suit, he wrote it out to a particular clothier, didn't he? And so now all you got to do is get on the telephone and ask the clothier, "What kind of suits do you sell?" And the clothier says, "Oh, well, we sell Hickey Freeman." Okay, so this guy wrote a check to the clothier who handles Hickey Freeman suits, and so we can deduce then that this guy wears Hickey Freeman suits. And maybe he even uses the memo box and tells us that he bought a Hickey Freeman suit. But even if you don't use the memo box, we know where you bought the suit, don't we? We know where you bought the shoes, don't we? And so, when you write your daughter a birthday gift of $50, you know, you write out the check to your daughter, Megan, $50, and in the memo you put down birthday. Well, okay, so now you know, the skip tracer knows that you've got at least one daughter named Megan that you gave $50 to for her birthday. You got an alimony check in there, it's marked alimony. Or it's written out to the prosecuting attorney's office. And so, you know, it's for $850. And so here's your alimony check. Here's the child support check. Here's all of these checks that go out here. Tell us about your lifestyle. A check that's written to U.S. News and World Report tells us that you're a conservative. A check written to Time Magazine tells us you're a liberal. A check written to Field and Stream tells us you're a sportsman. A check written to Guns and Ammo tells us that you're a gun owner. A check written to the National Rifle Association tells us that you're an activist gun owner. You know, those checks that you write tell an awful lot about you. And so the audience is sitting there kind of gaffed. I was absolutely dumbfounded. I had never seen anything like that in my life. And when I saw it, I made a resolve right then. I said, "I'm going to close my checking account." Now, the average person today is taught that if he doesn't have anything to hide, then why not tell it? Well, that could come back to bite you in the butt. And there's a thing here called brainwashing. The police use brainwashing on you in their interrogation. The highway patrolman is using brainwashing techniques when he approaches the window and asks you for your driver's license, registration, and proof of insurance. Now, you might not know what brainwashing is. Maybe nobody's ever told you. But government and their agencies like the CIA, the FBI, and various other groups and organizations use mind control and brainwashing and they do it for military purposes. Well, if it works for military purposes, could it work for prison purposes? Could we use brainwashing in prisons to keep the prison population under control or to make the prison system work more efficiently? Well, if it works on prisoners in a prisoner of war camp and it works on prisoners in a prison, could it work on people who are arrested and put in county jails? Well, if it works for people that are arrested and put in county jails, could it work for people who have driver's licenses and are driving around on the streets? Could it work on people who have checking accounts and bank at the banks? Could it work for people who have accounts with, say, the telephone company or the power company? Could it benefit the power company or big multinational corporations to use techniques discovered in war concerning brainwashing, concerning the way people react and behave when they're in certain circumstances? And could we use those techniques to cunningly coerce customers who come into the telephone company office? Could we train our clerks to use these techniques? It doesn't have to be all 160 techniques. It could just be 4 or 5 that benefits the phone company. It could just be 4 or 5 that benefits the power company. It could just be 4 or 5 that benefits the bank. It could just be 4 or 5 that benefits the auto salesman. So what we discover is that all of us are motivated by 5 motivators. So let me tell you what these 5 motivators are, and let me show you how this works. You're a very vain person. All of us are. So vanity is a characteristic of human nature, designed by God Himself and stuck into your brain. You suffer from this malady called vanity, whether you like it or not. And then there's an emotion called jealousy. When you see somebody have something, and it may be that you think, you know this person, and you say to yourself, that person absolutely does not deserve a Corvette. But yet, here's this guy driving around in a Corvette, and it just really bugs you because he's got a Corvette, and you've got a Chevy Nova, and it just really burns your buns. Okay, that's called jealousy. Very normal emotion. Don't think for a minute, you know, that you're suffering from some mental deficiency here. Then you get another emotion called lust. It's an inordinate desire for something that you don't want, can't use, shouldn't have, and don't need, but you want it anyway. You know, you're married and you got a wife and 5 kids, and then here comes this beautiful secretary down the hall, and you say to yourself, wow, boy, could I have fun with her. Okay, that's lust. That's sexual lust, but it could be lust after his job or over his car or something else. So here's a vanity, jealousy, lust. Here's another one, greed. Greed. I don't have enough. I've always asked people, you know, that said to me, you know, you've got too much. I had a guy tell me that one time. He says, you know, you've got too much. And I said, well, how much is enough? I've never met a man yet that had enough money. Boys and girls, I've been working all my life, and I still don't have enough money. Boys and girls, if I had $1 million, it would only be half enough. I know, because I've been there, and I've been back, and I can tell you right now, I've never had enough money. And you can take Donald Trump. You know, that guy gets up every morning and goes to work. I don't know how much money the guy's got, but it ain't enough. Donald Trump doesn't have enough money yet. And I'm not sure that he knows how much is enough either. Bill Gates gets up every day and goes to work. He's got $37 billion. He doesn't have enough. Finally, we've got vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. 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 Don't forget this fear. Insurance salesmen sell insurance by fear. They come to you and they say, oh my God, your house could burn to the ground in a Santa Ana wind in San Diego, California. You say, oh my God, yeah, houses burn down in Santa Ana winds, and so therefore, I need insurance. I need fire insurance. Furthermore, the bank says, we won't give you a mortgage on your house unless you have fire insurance. All right. Has it occurred to you that people are using cunning coercion to get you to do something that you wouldn't naturally or normally do, but which you can be nudged, you can be pushed into doing? Nobody's putting a gun to your head. You know, nobody's whipping you with a whip and drawing blood. But yet, you can be motivated through vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear to do things that you wouldn't think that you want to do. And that's brainwashing. Brainwashing. That's not exactly 100% of the definition of brainwashing. It's really called, if you want to go to the CIA, they call it a synthesis of the Russian textbook on psychopolitics. And psychopolitics is the art and science of asserting and maintaining dominion over the thoughts and loyalties of individuals, officers, bureaus, and masses of people, and the effecting of the conquest of enemy nations through mental healing. America has been conquered. You don't need to worry about Osama bin Laden. He's not your problem. America has been conquered. You've been conquered by your own government, your own bureaucracy. They're already in full control. When the policeman stops you alongside the road, you're motivated by fear. And when he says, "I want your driver's license, registration, and insurance," you say, "Yes, sir," and give it to him. I'm not telling you that it's wrong. I'm just telling you that that's where it starts. The guy who asks the question is the master. The man who is answering the questions is the servant. Having a driver's license in your pocket and operating a motor vehicle is a guardian-ward relationship called a privilege to drive, which is governed and exercised by the state through their agents. It's a guardian-ward relationship in which you're the ward and they're the guardian. Now, you know, you see yourself as being the master, the sovereign, the voter, and these are public servants. That's not true, and you know it. Those are your masters. They are not your servants, as demonstrated by the fact that you write letters to your senator and he votes the opposite way. That's not your servant following your instructions. Now, I'm an old-timey employer, and when I have a man come into my office and I say, "Bob, here's what I expect, here's what I want from you," he says, "Yes, sir," and "No, sir," and I'm the master, he's the servant. I know I'm the master. He knows I'm the master. I know he's the servant, and he knows he's the servant. And if he gets uppity, I just say, "Why don't you pick up your check, Bob, and we'll replace you with somebody that can follow instructions." See how simple that is? That's a master-servant relationship. All right, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet every day, daily. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. We teach 8 schools here. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. So if you walk up to the door, knock on the door, say, "Here, I'm here to go to school," you'll be disappointed. Sadly, disappointed. By prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then you can go to our homeschooling page on the website and get all that information free of charge, live and direct. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed to the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Now, that's for your listening convenience. You can listen to us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, anytime you want. In fact, I got to pass this on to you. I had a guy come in my office here the other day, and he's got a little box. It's called an iPod. He said he had over 1,000 of these programs on this little box that would fit neatly into his shirt pocket. I couldn't believe my eyeballs. I'm looking up here on the wall. I have a wall full of these discs that we make, these archives. I got an archive up here that you couldn't put in 15 boxes. And this guy's got the whole thing on this little box here called an iPod, if you can believe it. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. These Law Hour programs are on subjects like law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like to order one, then please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, let me give you a couple of examples of what you can do out here in the real world if you put your mind to it. You know, without a social security number and without a driver's license and without a birth certificate and all of these documents that the government says you have to have. Now, next year they're going to come up with a new document. It's called your National Identification Card. And I'm not going to go down and get one. And there's going to be some things that I will not be able to do in life without one. So I'm going to be more inconvenienced than you are. But I'm going to have more privacy than you do. And so we have to measure then convenience versus privacy. In most people's minds, if they have to be inconvenienced, they will give up their privacy. And that's fine. That's a choice that they have to make. But then don't call me on the phone and say, I'm from the People's Republic of Michigan. You know, that's a figment of your imagination. It is true that the state of Michigan makes a lot of inquiries into people's personal business and personal lives, and they regulate and control people to a degree that I would object to, and maybe after you've been regulated and controlled, maybe you're objecting to, but you did it yourself. I mean, you know, nobody in Michigan government comes up to you, points a gun at your head and says, go down and get a social security number. Now, it may be that you were cunningly coerced. Let me tell you a little story here. I had a student one time, he's over in Tennessee, his name is Stan Perchowski. And old Stan, young fella, bright, he's an engineer, very bright young man, and very quick to learn. You know, you listen to his name, Perchowski, and you say he's a Pole, he must be stupid. Oh, no. Don't kid yourself. Don't get stereotyped now, think them Poles are all dumb. That isn't true. I don't know where that came from exactly, but, you know, you got this stereotype of Jews in your mind. You got a stereotype of Poles in your mind, you know. Okay, this guy is sharp, really sharp. And he went to my school. In fact, I think he went to two or three of them. And one day, he called me on the phone. He said, I'm trying to get a driver's license over here in Tennessee, and they want my social security number. And he said, I don't have one. And so I pointed out to him, I said, well, 37 states in the union use social security numbers as driver identification numbers, and 13 states don't. And he said, well, the social security number is totally voluntary. And I think that it's unconstitutional for the state to require me to voluntarily get a social security number to obtain a right to drive. Now, you don't have a right to drive, you should, but you don't, but you do have a right to the privilege to drive, and it has to be delivered on an equal basis to everyone without discrimination. He says, I'm a Hebrew, I'm being discriminated against. And I said, that's exactly correct. I believe you're right. I think you got a good legal argument there. He said, what do you think we ought to do in lieu of the fact that we have not had great success going into the district court arguing rights? And he said, what do you think of this? He said, I'm going to go in for a writ of mandamus. And I said, well, that's an extraordinary remedy. And he said, that's right. It's an extraordinary remedy. I want to mandate. I want to compel the driver's license agency here to comply with the First Amendment to the Constitution. I said, why don't you give it a shot, Stan? So old Stan goes into district court, files a writ of mandamus. Now, Stan called me on the phone, kept me abreast of what was going on here as the process was going on. And he said, I was talking to the judge the other day, and the judge asked me, Mr. Prochaska, when do you think the last writ of mandamus was filed here in the state? And Stan said, I haven't got a clue, Judge. And the judge said, 27 years ago. 27 years. Now, if you take a look at extraordinary remedies, you can't use one of the 47 extraordinary remedies in law until you have exhausted all of your ordinary remedies. Now, the ordinary remedy, you know, would be a lawsuit. But Stan went in and overcame that objection and said, well, we've tried ordinary lawsuits in the past and we weren't successful, so therefore it's pretty obvious that an ordinary suit is not the right remedy. He pointed out that Social Security was voluntary, that many people are opposed to it, 14 million people don't have it, and that you can't compel me to get a Social Security number, and so therefore the states demand that I get a Social Security number. Now here's an interesting little concept. The Supreme Court made an observation one time in Miranda versus Arizona, and they said, well, where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. So here's Tennessee mandating by legislation that you get a Social Security number to get a driver's license. And so therefore, if you were an Amish man practicing your religion, you couldn't get a driver's license because you don't have a Social Security number. So you'd have to waive your religious beliefs to get a Social Security number so you could get the privilege that the state offers so that you can drive. And this privilege of driving has to be offered on an equal basis to everybody without regard to race, color, creed, or religion. See? And so this is the stuff that makes constitutional confrontation. Now, governments and government agents and agencies make all kinds of unconstitutional, illegal, and unlawful demands upon all of us all the time. But as I pointed out earlier, old Judge Schmidt pointed out to me, he said, out of 1,100 rights, you only have the rights that you can claim. So here's Stan Prochaska saying, I'm going to claim my right to the privilege of driving an automobile with a driver's license in Tennessee, and I need a judicial remedy. So the state now, after the pleadings were submitted and after the state had gone through its preliminary answers and preliminary technical moves, came to the conclusion, we can't knock this guy out on technical moves. This case is going to go to trial on the merits. Their legal counsel came to the conclusion that we've got a discriminatory policy here. Now, how are we going to deal with this? We don't want to give up the Social Security number for millions of people over here. We don't want to disrupt our unconstitutional, illegal, unlawful scheme to compel people to use their Social Security number to get a driver's license. We don't want to give that up. And we've got a guy here that's threatening the entire system. How are we going to deal with this guy? Well, if we were dealing with the mafia, they'd just call Murder Incorporated and have him offed. They'd kill him. Sometimes government agencies do that, the CIA and others. They assassinate people that they don't like that get in their way. Sometimes these people are rounded up, prosecuted, and put in prison, like Manuel Noriega. Things like that happen. Now, this doesn't happen all the time, and ordinarily the government and its agents and agencies can coerce people. They can threaten them. They can just scare the living hell out of people to get them to comply, to waive their rights. Some people you can do that to, about 99.9%. And then there's this little small group of people over here called iconoclasts that aren't motivated or moved by fear. You know, sometimes they're motivated by vanity, jealousy, lust, or greed, but they're not motivated by fear. They don't threaten easy. So sometimes, if fear doesn't work, then they'll come back and they'll offer you something. I told you the story about Ziggy Crothers. And Ziggy had made up his mind he's going to prison. But when it was all said and done, and all the threats and all the intimidation was done, they gave him a one-way bus ticket back home to Chattanooga, remember? Well, that's what happened to Stan Prochaska. The state's driver's license agency, I don't know what they call it over there, but they went to the state legislature and they had enacted for Prochaska what's known as the Prochaska Rule. It's a law enacted by the the legislature of Tennessee, called the Perchowski Rule. And it's just a law for Stan Perchowski, just one citizen out of millions that live in the state, that he can drive a car, he can obtain a driver's license without a social security number. Isn't that just special? Now, if you want to do the same thing, you can, but you'll have to file a writ of mandamus also. You'll have to do the same thing he did. Now, you probably are a legal illiterate, unable to file, unable to prosecute a mandamus, so you'd have to go hire an attorney. And your attorney would probably tell you, this is crazy, you can't do this. You can't get a driver's license without a social security number. Be intelligent. Just go down and get your social security number. I mean, this is your lawyer, would probably tell you that. But like I said, there are some people, you know, that aren't going to get the mark of the beast. There are some people that are motivated by right and wrong, and they just simply say, you know, right's right and wrong's wrong. And so they follow this biblical principle in Acts 5:29. We ought to obey God rather than men. The problem with Social Security is that it's the mark of the beast. The problem with Social Security is it's limited liability. The problem with Social Security is it's a contract with the state. All of these activities are prohibited by the laws of God. God told us not to do that. Christians, of course, they don't follow the law of God. They follow the law of the state. Most of them do. There's a few that don't, but most of them, by and large, most of them do that. Now, that being the case, you know, most people can be cunningly coerced into waiving their rights due to their ignorance, and therefore they cannot have privacy. And that's because they can't say no. So that's the way life is, and I'm not here to change your mind or change your perspective, but here to report to you that's the way the game's played. Now, if you're of a mind or of a bent and you say to yourself, geez, I'd kind of like to have some privacy over here. I'd like to learn how to do this. Okay, you can. You can. And there's a law school here that offers you a course of curriculum to obtain these or to attain these kinds of goals. If you want to open a bank account without a social security number, yeah, you can do that. Do you want to live your life without a social security number? Yeah, you can do that. Now, I'm living in a house here, and I don't have a social security number, but I got electricity in here. Now, somehow or another, I was smart enough or devious enough or criminal enough or something happened here that I was able to get electricity delivered to my house without a social security number. I got a telephone here. Somehow, some way, I did something to get telephone service and I don't have a social security number. And I'll tell you a little story. One time, I went into my, had an office on Chinden Boulevard in Boise, Idaho. It's actually a little town called Garden City. But Garden City is, you know, like a lot of towns, you know, surrounded by the big town, you know, like Independence, Missouri is surrounded by Kansas City. So you people in Independence lose your identity, see? So I'm in this little town, and the little town over here has a water company. They handle the water, you know, and so you go down to City Hall and you sign up for water service. I went down to City Hall one day, so I'd like to get a water. And the sweet young girl behind the counter, she said, "Well, sir, you have to pay a $50 deposit." Now, I had rented a commercial building. It was before I rented it. It was an insurance office, and the insurance company left there and moved to bigger quarters up on Fairview. And so I moved in. There's about 2,400 square feet, as I recall. And I converted that into a residence. I won't get into why I converted expensive commercial space into a living quarters, but I did. Now, the rules, that is, the zoning, was this. In commercial buildings, that is, if you're on Chinden Boulevard and you're running a restaurant or you're running a store or a gas station, that a $50 deposit that you had to pay if you're in a commercial business to get your water turned on. But if you're a resident, you didn't have to pay the $50. So I went down and I rented a commercial space and then I moved in there and this is my residence. You know, you opened the door and you walked into my living room. And so I said, this is not a commercial building. This is not a commercial use. This is a residence. And since it's a residence, there is no water deposit. And so the young girl said, "Oh, I didn't know that." So she went ahead and signed me up as a residence, and I went on, lived my life, and everything's going along pretty well. One day I got a call from a guy from the city. He said he was from the water department. And he said, "I'd have to come down and pay that $50 deposit because the building that I am in is a commercial building." And I said, "Yes, sir, it's a commercial building, but I am living in it as a residence. This is not a business. This is a residence. It's my home. I'm living here." And Garden City has not zoned residences out of commercial. They have zoned commercial out of residential. Very important legal distinction here for all of you zoning and planning people out there. And so he said he didn't care one way or the other. He said, "That's a commercial building. It's on Chinon Boulevard. It's commercial, and you're going to pay the $50. Now, I won't get into a long explanation as to why I'm not going to pay the $50, but it was pretty important to me not to pay that $50. It was pretty important to me to have a residence instead of a business. And so I said, "No, sir, I'm not going to do that." And so he said, "Yes, you are." And so the conversation terminated, and the next thing I knew, I went back to the kitchen a few days later, and I turned on the tap to get a drink of water. Nothing came out. Now, I'm a plumber. And when I turn on the water and there's no water there, you know I'm a plumber. I know where to go next. So I went right out to the curb. We're gonna chase this water deficiency problem down. And so I opened up the manhole cover to the water meter, and I looked out inside, and the water meter had been turned off. Well, as I said before, I'm a plumber, so I went over to my car, and I got a crescent wrench out, and I came back, and I turned the water on. So I went back and got my drink of water, and that's the end of that. So some more days went by, and pretty soon I went back to get a drink of water, and there's no water. So I went over to the water meter, and sure enough, it was a problem with the water meter again. This time the water meter was gone. I mean, they took it out. Gone. G-O-N. So, you can't bridge across the water meter. That'd be stealing the city's water. So, I wrote up a complaint, and I went down and filed it. And I went down to city, what I did was I went down to the health department first, and I said, "Could this pose a problem?" So, they came out with a lady, and they red-tagged the premises, and they said, "You've got until next Tuesday to move out of here. You cannot live here without water." And so I filed an action against the city, and I went down and delivered it to the city attorney, and oh, was he mad. Why, he called me everything but a white man. And so I had the suit filed, and about the following Monday, the mayor, who was Mayor Mockwitz, she called me on the phone. She said, "Well, Mr. Gordon, isn't there some way that we could resolve this problem?" I said, "Sure, put my water meter back in. That'll solve that problem." She said, "Well, could we talk about this?" I said, "Sure." So I went down to City Hall, and she invited me into the office, and we sat down, started talking a little bit, and she said, "Shirley, now I'd sued these people. I think it was for, if I remember, $50,000. Or maybe it's $100,000. I forgot what I sued for, but I want to tell you what the costs of this lawsuit are. First of all, I checked up, and the city had a deductible of $5,000. So the city has to put up $5,000 in their own defense, and then the insurance company comes in, and you can just about bet that the insurance company is going to defend against this. You know, this case is going to the U.S. Supreme Court now, because I'm going to take it there. And it costs about $250,000 to argue a case from scratch to the U.S. Supreme Court for conclusion. Did you know that? And so what's the city of Garden City doing? They're going to argue and spend $250,000 of the insurance company's money to find out whether or not I have to pay a $50 deposit to get my water turned on. And I told the mayor, I said, "Hell, I got lots of $50 bills." And I said, "I bet you I got more $50 bills than you got $250,000 bills, and I'll guarantee you that the claims adjuster at the insurance company is going to be down here and talk to you." And she said, "He has already been here to talk to me." Because, you see, the city has to notify their insurance company when they get sued. Insurance companies don't care anything about whether or not this is zoned commercial or residential. They're getting sued, and they took a look at the lawsuit and said, this is frivolous, this is nonsense. It ain't frivolous or nonsense to me. I got a residence. My residence is sitting in a commercial building on Chinden Boulevard. The city has not zoned residences out of commercial. They have zoned commercial out of residences. I can't open my business in a home out here in the residential area, but you didn't tell me. You didn't make a law. You didn't pass an ordinance that said I couldn't have my home sitting in an office building. And that's exactly what I did. Now let's litigate. So the mayor decided that the costs were kind of excessive, over $50, and she said, what can we do to resolve this? I put the meter back. She said, it's on, and it's done. At 2 o'clock that afternoon, they put the meter back. I never paid the $50 deposit. Now, you know, a lot of you people are going to say, well, you know, all that fuss and muss over $50. That's right. All that fuss and muss over $50. Right's right, wrong's wrong. That's the end of the argument. I'm right, you're wrong. Sit down and shut up. Now, when I'm wrong, I sit down and I shut up. But I wasn't wrong. And furthermore, I've got privacy interests that are involved here. And I'm going to exercise my rights, and I'm going to exercise my privacy. Now, not everybody wants to do that. Well, that's fine. But don't call me on the phone and say, well, I live in the People's Republic of California. You do not live in the People's Republic of California. California is governed by our Constitution, just like Benjamin Franklin was governed by our Constitution, and Ben Franklin did not have a complaint about living in the People's Republic of Pennsylvania. And I don't have any complaints about living in the People's Republic of Missouri. And we have some very onerous rules, regulations, customs, usages, and practices going on right here in Missouri. And I've opted out of all of them. I operate a school. I don't have a license. I'm not bonded. I'm not insured. But I'm not open to the public either. It's a private school. So if you want to be private, you can be. But if you want to be public, it's more convenient and it's more common. So if you want to be common, be public. If you want to be uncommon, be private. That's the bottom line. So privacy is available to all of us. It isn't the sole purview of President Bush or of some elite bunch somewhere that hides behind gates of iron in a gated community. Privacy is available to everybody. You can have privacy living in the projects if you put your mind to it. Hey, I'm about out of time again. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Remember, we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, nonprofit, non-sectarian law school. We're open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. For your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.